Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today I'll be talking with journalist Melinda Henneberger about her recent trip to South Sudan to raise awareness about the famine and near genocide going on there. We'll also be discussing the relationship between Christians and Muslims in the area and learning about the American Catholic doctor whose ministry under horrific conditions is saving many lives. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is journalist Melinda Henneberger. You may know Melinda from her appearances on shows like Face the Nation, or from her years at the Washington Post, the New York Times, or her latest job as a columnist at the Kansas City Star. Recently, Melinda traveled far beyond the borders of the United States to cover a story and situation she believes deserve far more attention than they're getting. It's about the famine and near genocide going on in South Sudan, the slaughter of both Muslims and Christians, and the inspirational Catholic doctor from New York who risks his life every day under hellish conditions to make a difference for his patients. To tell us more, I am pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Melinda Henneberger. Melinda, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're writing about the troubles in South Sudan for the Kansas City Star, and these troubles in South Sudan, they don't get a lot of attention in American media. I'm really not that familiar with them. So let me start off by asking, how did this situation and the idea for this trip get on your radar?
Actually, I know people who are connected to the Sudan Relief Fund and have been in touch with them for a long time about going because their work there is really amazing, and I had wanted to see it for myself for some time.
Yeah.
And I was really very grateful that the Kansas City Star was so supportive of my going.
Sure, sure. Well, you're right about, it's like you're saying it's not, you're calling it a genocide in your articles, and yet there's not official recognition that it's a genocide. So what exactly is going on over there with the political situation?
A complete meltdown of the country. This is the youngest country on earth. It's a country that the United States had a lot to do with helping get born. Our president, then President George W. Bush, really was quite involved, as was his envoy, John Danforth, a former senator from Missouri, who just really rode herd on the thing, and they pushed through the 2005 peace agreement that led to the 2011 independence of South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
South Sudan, a place that had been persecuted for decades by the Islamist government in Khartoum in Sudan.
Right.
And so this was such a hopeful moment in 2011 when this new country came into being. But unfortunately, there were a number of things that went wrong almost immediately. There was someone named John Gehring, who was really the hope of this new country,
mm-hmm.
who had really an amazing ability to bring people together in a place that is still very divided along tribal lines and other lines. He was really seen as the hope of the country, and he was killed in a helicopter crash only 3 weeks after becoming the country's first vice president.
Wow.
So then, unfortunately, you have kind of seen the situation where it's like the abused who becomes the abuser. So
mm-hmm.
you see some of the behaviors that these people had suffered under from the government in Sudan now being repeated by their new government. So you have really what began as a personal conflict between the president, Salva Kiir, and the vice president, Makar, really has then went into a more general tribal struggle between the Dinka, which is the main group there, and the Nuer and Nuer.
Mm-hmm.
For those not familiar, as I was not that long ago myself, not.
Right.
But now you just, that even it's devolved further from there into, as somebody from South Sudan said, now it's everybody against everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, for one thing, because the soldiers there have been at war for such a long time that I think that's what they know how to do is fight. But who's caught in all this? Who's suffering in all this? The civilians. I mean, 1.5 million people have fled the country already. Most of the refugees are women and children. I mean, this refugee settlement I visited in we visited several in northern Uganda, but one of them is the largest in the world now, 272,000 people, 86% of them women and children.
Wow.
In what, you know, in what as of last summer was a tiny village.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going on and on. You might want to ask me.
No, that's okay. I'm talking to Melinda Henneberger of the Kansas City Star. We're talking about her recent trip to South Sudan to cover the famine there. And the do I call it a genocide or is it a near genocide?
Here's the story. So you know, the UN has been warning and warning and warning again that this is a country on the brink of genocide.
Mm-hmm.
What would it take for it to become a real genocide? I mean, someone there, I think, said something very true. Someone in the Ugandan government and got agreement from the UN to say, you know, here's another reason we can't call it a genocide. If we called it a genocide, that would mean that we learned nothing from what happened in Rwanda in the mid-90s when you had 800,000 people brutally murdered, you know, hacked to death, many of them with machetes,
yeah,
in the span of 3 months, and we did not intervene. Another reason, though, that there has been some reticence to call it that is that normally you think of a genocide as one group out to wipe out another group. And in this case, it's true that there have been atrocities on multiple sides.
Okay.
However, okay, the result is the same. You see, there is the UN has called it rightly ethnic cleansing, and you see, you know, mass starvation, forced starvation, mass rape. You see some of the same things you saw in Rwanda. I mean, I talked to a bishop, a Catholic bishop, who was saying that in 7 of his 22 parishes in an area of the country that was formerly one of the most peaceful, Yambio, they now have, in some places, tens of thousands of people coming to live around the church, thinking that the church can be a protection to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we remember from what happened in Rwanda that people also fled into churches and they were not safe, that even that was not respected. And you're seeing that there too. I talked to a priest who said that people even came in, you know, to the area around the church and kidnapped a couple of women, were shooting, just brutal, senseless acts, ripping the surgical bandages off an elderly woman. And one of the attackers was then killed and the rest fled. And one of the attackers had told the priest there, who was trying to block the path to the people,
mm-hmm,
get out of my way or I'll nail you to that tree like Jesus.
Wow. Wow.
So, I mean, this really could not be more serious, whatever name we choose to put on it.
So are the churches really kind of living up to the example of Jesus in that sacrificial way? Are they trying to be a light in the darkness, so to speak, over there?
They certainly are. I mean, it's really very impressive what they're doing, and sad that they, you know, that they have this situation after having such high hopes not that long ago.
I mean,
they, you know, this is not a new situation for them. It's a repeat, and so is our apparent lack of interest.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Melinda Henneberger of the Kansas City Star. She recently traveled to South Sudan with the Sudan Relief Fund to cover the famine there and the genocide or ethnic cleansing going on there. The website for the newspaper is kansascity.com. You can look up her stories there. One of the places you went over there is the Nuba Mountains, and you met a very beloved doctor, Dr. Tom Katena, however it's pronounced.
Katena, yes.
Katena. And to tell us about him and the work that he does, because this is not an area where there is a lot of medical help for. I believe you write in the article, one of your columns, 1.5 million people.
That's right. So there are 1.5 million people living in the Nuba Mountains in what is still Sudan, even though they do not want to still be part of Sudan. And so their government has been at war with them for most of you know, for decades, with brief periods of peace. Mm-hmm. So they, international aid is not allowed in. You bring aid in at your own risk. Independent media is not allowed in. And they have four doctors treating all of these people, and only one of them, this Dr. Tom Katena, who is a Catholic missionary, is the only trained surgeon there. And he's really a very rightly beloved figure because he, could work anywhere and chooses to work in this place. So, and they're very excited because Dr. Tom, as everybody calls him, recently married a local woman. So they're sort of this is a rare moment of celebration where, thousands of people attended the wedding, where they killed, I forget how many cows for the celebration, and poured, I think it was 400 liters of local wine. And they really feel like, okay, Dr. Tom is having married a woman from Nuba, is not going anywhere now. He's ours now.
Right, right.
But he really, his hospital has been bombed multiple times, as have other hospitals in the area. Schools have been bombed. Even the local mosque where Omar al-Bashir, the really war criminal who's the president of Sudan, has said he looks forward to praying there after he wipes out the, as he calls them, black insects. That's what he calls the Nuba people.
Okay.
So there is a religious aspect to the violence there. There is a racial one, and there's a question of resources because the Nuba Mountains are very fertile. They have minerals, including gold, that are mostly untapped. And the religious aspect is very interesting because the Nuba Mountains is a place where most people are Muslim also, but they have a more liberal interpretation. They don't want Sharia law. They get along very well with their Christian neighbors. Many families are mixed families in that they're, for example, Dr. Tom's wife, I think it's her mother who is Christian, her father is Muslim, and this is just not an issue for people there.
Yeah, so really, in this place, the Nuba Mountains would actually be an example of interfaith understanding and cooperation, and
absolutely,
yet they're the ones being targeted and bombed.
They're the ones being targeted and bombed, and I'm very sorry to say that our government has rewarded, really, the government in Khartoum, and not only turned a blind eye to what's happening in Nuba, but has even blamed them for not going along with a peace agreement that would have, finally provided humanitarian aid, but only if it all came through Khartoum. So the people there say, we weren't fighting for food all these years. We were fighting for freedom. Mm-hmm. And on top of which, we don't trust what comes to us from Khartoum. You know, there are enemies. So
it would get diverted, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm talking to Melinda Henneberger of the Kansas City Star. We're talking about her trip to South Sudan to cover the famine, the genocide there. You mentioned before that they don't let in humanitarian aid and no media, and yet you were there as bringing aid, I think, and also covering. So was your own life in danger at all during this trip?
You never know. They actually have had a ceasefire that the Nubans did not acknowledge or trust. And indeed, the day after we left, there was an attack.
Mm.
So, you know, because almost no one goes there, we didn't have such good information before we went on the level of security, the level of danger. A German colleague of mine, a German photojournalist who came on the trip as well, said that she had really tried to find out from German officials, and they said, oh, going there is a suicide mission.
Mm.
I certainly did not feel particularly threatened, for one thing, because people there are so lovely. They so love America.
Okay.
Everyone runs up to you. Why? Because they really loved George W. Bush. They actually admire Donald Trump a lot. They love his tough talk. They even love his America First talk, because mm-hmm. that's how they feel about NUBA. They definitely love his anti-terror talk, because mm-hmm. they feel the same way about the government in Khartoum. They have very high expectations that I'm not sure are going to be met for what our government is willing to do for them. But, you know, when we were there, a MiG flew over, and that is usually the precursor to hostilities beginning again. And so that made people very nervous. And well, the few people who do go in with aid, you have to go in at night.
Mm-hmm.
There are no paved roads there. I mean, to talk about the isolation there, it's like visiting someplace in the Bible. I mean,
wow.
So there's no electricity, of course, no internet, phone service, indoor plumbing, hotels, restaurants, roads. I mean, there are roads, but they're not paved.
Yeah.
So you go in at night, and, you know, roads like that will eat your car. So we broke down several times just going in.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that we were in any danger from these very friendly people who, you know, we were broken down for most of one night, and not another car went by on mm-hmm. the road.
Okay.
But okay. People walking, which is very much in the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in terms of Dr. Katena, I mean, you write in your columns, you know, he's seen some horrible things over the years. So I'm curious, where does he get the strength and the courage to stay committed to this mission?
Definitely his faith. I mean, he is a missionary. That's why he's there.
Okay.
And so, you know, he has not only seen all these horrible things, I mean, he documents them. He has kept records of everything he's seen, of all the attacks on civilians, and he has seen in his hospital the result of it. And he, you know, I asked him if he was planning to stay forever, and he said the only thing that would convince him to move would be if the people became so well taken care of that they didn't need him anymore. And sadly, that's certainly not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Melinda Henneberger about her trip to South Sudan. She's covering the famine and the genocide there. We've been talking about what the church is doing to help refugees, what an American Catholic doctor, Dr. Tom Katena, is doing there to help. He's one of the only four doctors there to help 1.5 million people. And, you know, in light of the stories you heard from people in the refugee camp, because you write about visiting the refugee settlement in Uganda, the stories mm-hmm. you hear from Dr. Katena, how is it for you as a Catholic yourself? Did your faith help you deal with hearing these stories about some of the worst impulses of human nature? How do you not fall into despair?
I have to say that I did feel very affected by this. You can't not feel affected by the stories you hear. I mean, one boy brought me to tears, and that doesn't happen very often in the moment that I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
This 16-year-old boy from South Sudan who was talking about watching his father killed in front of him. And then he and his mother and younger brother fled. His mother died on the way. So it's just him and his younger brother. And he must be the saddest boy I'd ever met. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just hear these stories over and over again. I mean, so I said in one of the pieces, it was almost like hearing confession, even though theirs weren't the relevant sins, because an aid worker announced that I was an American journalist there to hear the stories of the people there. And a long line formed. And what I heard over and over from these women was that how guilty they felt for leaving their husbands' bodies after seeing their husbands killed, because they felt over and over I'd hear, I had no choice but to run with the children or we would have been killed too.
Yeah.
You know, one woman said, he died and I don't even know where they buried him.
Mm.
But you asked about how my faith has a lot to do with why I wanted to go. And what motivates me to want to tell these stories that should be getting more attention, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, you're right about visiting the refugees in the settlement in Uganda. So I'm curious, what do people who, the refugees who escaped to Uganda, what awaits them there?
That's an amazing part of the story. Can you imagine? So in just, 700,000 people have fled into the northern part of Uganda since the peace process broke down last July.
Mm-hmm.
So in this one village, Yumbe, which, as I think I said before, was just a tiny village, nothing around it, empty grassland. So since this first settlement opened in August, 272,000 people moved in just down the road from this one formerly tiny village. So everyone who comes to Uganda gets a free plot of land, mm-hmm. working papers. There are no walls or fences in this in these settlements, which is why they call them settlements and mm-hmm. not camps. And the generosity of the people there. I mean, first of all, we can't even fathom. Okay, you're living in your village. 272,000 people moving down the road, and a drought is going on, and you share your water.
Wow.
That's really the most impressive thing.
Wow.
I mean, everything about your life changes. Food is now more expensive.
Right, right.
Because there's no more demand for it. And not all the land is coming through the government. There have also been a number of private donations, many of them inspired by this Catholic radio station called Radio Pachis.
Mm-hmm.
That has been for a number of years promoting inner peace between different faith groups. And in this one corner of Uganda where this where I visited, it's mostly Muslims living there, and all of these people they've welcomed are Christian.
Wow.
So it's really quite an amazing thing. So do you hear complaints? Yes, but they're so minor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the biggest complaint I heard was, you know, these people who drive the aid trucks drive like crazy people. They're scaring me. Can't they slow down? Because our kids have to walk to school along the side of the road.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, and you could hear that anywhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, they say, well, we'd like a little more help for our families, too. But mm-hmm. they... person after person said, you know, they need help. They're welcome here. They have nowhere to go. They've done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And they also feel that they owe the Sudanese a debt of gratitude, because when there were refugees from Uganda decades ago, when they're under the dictator Idi Amin,
mm-hmm.
what's now South Sudan, people took them in.
Yeah.
So they really remember that.
Yeah. Well, listening to you, to the story, it reminds me of the parable of the widow's mite in the Bible, because
yes.
they're giving out of their, you know, out of exactly what they have, the little they have, as opposed
right.
to their abundance.
Right.
So
exactly.
Well, I mean, tell us, if anybody listening say, you know, they're horrified at the things going on, they'd like a way to help. Is there anything that can be done, or is this really in the hands of politicians who are so far away and just are not, you know, are not really looking to come to a peaceful settlement?
Well, I don't know that the leadership, the so-called leadership, I should say, in South Sudan is looking to come to a peaceful settlement, but I wish we would get involved in terms of a humanitarian intervention, given the seriousness of what's happening there. So
mm-hmm.
I think you can definitely call the White House and call your representatives and say you care about what's happening there.
Yeah.
And then on the humanitarian side, I mean, you know, the United Nations is rightly criticized on a number of fronts, but something they do very well is take care of refugees. And the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, I mean, they're only 45% funded for what they're doing in Uganda. And the need is great. I mean, they can't keep up with the need.
Yeah.
So people are flowing across the border. There is no limit on how many Uganda will accept. They're having to cut back on rations of food and water just because the need is so much greater than what they have to give. So, you know, that's one place to donate. Also, the Sudan Relief Fund does, a Catholic group does wonderful work there, does helps fund bringing in water, helps train nurses and teachers, and funds churches that are working with this with their people inside South Sudan, as well as in Uganda. So another place, of course, is Doctors Without Borders works there. Samaritan's Purse, Franklin Graham's group does a lot in terms of bringing water, drilling for water, and also transporting another thing, the medicine, for example, that's brought in by Sudan Relief Fund.
Okay. So there definitely are ways to help. I'm Tony Rossi. Yes. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I've been talking to Melinda Henneberger. She works for the Kansas City Star, and she's been writing about this visit she took to South Sudan. She covered the famine there, the genocide there, and she got to know a lot of the people, the refugees who were affected by this war. These are Muslims and Christians and Catholics who are living together, and it sounds like a great deal of harmony, but they're being attacked by their government, and she's trying to raise awareness about this problem. She just told us about some ways that, you know, we can help by listening and talking to contacting government officials, donating to various relief funds, the Sudan Relief Fund, like she said. And, you know, there's lots of good human stories. So I encourage you to read Melinda's work at kansascity.com. It's the website of the Kansas City Star. And Melinda, thanks so much for sharing your stories today and for trying to raise awareness about this issue that really a lot of us, including myself, did not know a lot about.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
We all likely pray that we get through life without times of darkness, but the reality is that they're unavoidable. The solution, as we say at the Christophers, is to light one candle. And ultimately, the light of that candle has only one source, Jesus, who ignites the divine spark within us. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Jesus, the Light of the World. It will help you see the radiance of the Savior all around you and allow you to move forward in life with hope and love. To request your free copy of Jesus, the Light of the World, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.